Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
And welcome back to another round of the Underdog Dynasty Podcast AAC edition. My name's Dan Morrison. That's Emily Van Buskirk. How are you doing today, Emily?
I'm doing all right. Just dodging raindrops out here in Mobile, Alabama.
Oh yeah, I've got that. You're at the Senior Bowl because I don't think people inherently know that's why you'd be in Mobile, but you know, there's plenty to do in Mobile. I actually think that's not like untrue.
This is apparently the original birthplace of Mardi Gras.
I was just about to say that. I've never been to Mobile, but I've heard that they've got a huge Mardi Gras, which is not too far from now.
Yeah, the Airbnb I'm staying in is decorated with beads, and it's a fun place. You know, it's definitely different. If you're going to look it up, make sure to Google Mobile, Alabama Leprechaun for a good video.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
That's pretty perfect.
But no, it's exciting this week because you have the whole, you know, all of the draft people are here, all of these players from college football that are trying to transition and chase their dreams. So it really is the best week.
I think it's so mean because for people who don't know how the Senior Bowl works, for stuff, you have to be a senior to play in it. But basically they divide you up into two teams, an American team and a national team. They give you a coaching staff from either the AFC or the NFC. And they give them the Jets and the Lions staffs respectively. And I think that's so mean. Like no one
Why
else
does
was
it mean?
Because they're the Jets and Lions. They're just like,
I mean, I'll
you
say
couldn't
this.
Get someone decent. You couldn't get the Charger staff in for the AFC maybe. And then on the NFC, like, you know, I don't know. There's got to be like someone just putzing about that would be better. Like, maybe like
these guys are grateful to be learning from NFL people at all. And they're taking in as much as they can every day.
I'm
not
going to
comment
here on
the quality, but it's,
I'm teasing. That's all.
But it is funny is the remarked difference between the two coaching staff. So when they break it up into practice for people who have never, heard about Senior Bowl week, every day they do practices starting on Tuesday and going all the way till Friday. And you have the national team first for 2 hours and then the American team after. So you watch, you know, the first group and then you watch the next group. So it's very easy to compare and contrast what's going on between the two teams. And what we noticed yesterday in day one is that the Jets staff, who is the national team, is very regimented and detailed and old school drills, like very like almost militaristic, I would say, how they run it. Yeah. And there was some energy, but the other group, you know, run by the Lions was way more like loosey goosey. The guys were getting chippy during drills and during the scenarios, and it was just like more fun. So I mean, take that for what it's worth.
I'll tell you what, you can watch some Senior Bowl practices on ESPN. They usually show, like, I've been watching before we started recording. I was watching one of the Lions staff practices. There's at one point they started just doing a one-on-one blocking drill between a tight end from San Diego State and I don't know who the defensive lineman was, but I think he was from South Carolina, I'm not certain. But this tight end got blown up twice in a row trying to block him. And they just kept being like, all right. And they're like, let's see you try that again. And just one-on-one drill with everyone shouting around. So you're right. From what I've seen, which is minimal, especially compared to you, it's been a little bit loosey-goosey.
And it's funny, Kim is out there right now, my partner. She's shooting it for us today. I decided to stay in and do some work. It is raining. And she called me because they got the Oregon player today. I'm trying to look up my notes here.
It's not the Bidot, right?
No, hold on 1 second. I have him in front of me because they just added him to the roster because of the guys that dropped out.
Yeah, I unfortunately didn't think to write down his name. I've got a bunch of Senior Bowl names written down and no one from Oregon.
No, you're totally fine because he was a late ad, but oh, here we go. Verone McKinley. He's a safety, and she called me, Kim called me, because I said, I need you to shoot him. It's his first day, blah, blah, blah. And she calls me and she goes, this kid just got lit up, like ankles broken by some receiver on the other side. And she couldn't remember who it was, but I'm going to go dig up the clip and try and find it, because apparently it was like the entire stadium, like, let out a collective gasp. So that was not great for the Pac-12. Yeah. Not great.
Oh, like I said, that San Diego State tight end, you don't want to get blown back in a blocking drill twice in a row when it's one-on-one and everyone's staring at you, not being able to handle some, you know, D end or whatever.
And we asked them about it today in the media day, you know, how they felt it was going. And a lot of them said the same thing. You know, they haven't played football and touched a football in 2 months. Mm-hmm. So it is rusty. And that's what these 3 days are kind of about, is learning the playbook, shaking off the dust, and getting ready to compete on Saturday. So,
you know what I mean? Like, I'm not an NFL scout or thing, but I think a lot of it is trying to like see, how do guys respond to coaching? Is this guy going to be coachable at the next level? Is this guy the kind of guy who, when you tell him something, he needs it explained another time? Or is it a guy you can immediately put it into action? You know what I mean? And so some of it is checking the raw talent, but there's tape to check raw talent. They'll get your 40 time and all that to check your athleticism. So I think it's a lot more about how they take coaching and how they work together. Because everyone knows you've got, as a quarterback, no chemistry with these wide receivers, for instance. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, honestly, that's where players like Bailey Zappi, who I think has been playing one of the best of the quarterback group. And I think it's because partially his attitude, he's very coachable. He takes direction. He makes adjustments. You see him seeing the game. And I think that sets him apart from somebody like Kenny Pickett, who obviously has a lot of talent, but, you know, may not be as easy to work with.
Is Kenny Pickett down there right now?
He is. Yes, he is. He refused to have his hands measured. Was the big news.
That means they're small hands. That means he knows he's got small hands. That's all.
Yeah.
And like, I think hand size is the silliest thing they do in any part of the NFL draft process. You know what I mean? But like, that just means he's got small hands. If I was going to be an NFL like quarterback or prospect, which is obviously a kind of far-fetched joke of a possibility, but like, I wouldn't run the 40 time. Nope. No need for that. I'm slow. I'm not going to run it. I'll let you know I'm slow. I don't need the video of it happening.
He's apparently rumored to have 8.25 inch hands. And the biggest concern, allegedly, and I don't know how, I would have to ask my scout friends, but apparently it's how they might hold up in bad weather.
Yep.
He never saw much precipitation in his college career.
He played.
So there's the stat, I guess, I don't know. Like, apparently it wasn't a thing. And then they said the stat that came out was no NFL quarterback with sub 9-inch hands has started a game in the past decade in the NFL. So I don't know.
I don't know either. I know that there's like things they say about your hand size as a quarterback specifically, like it's going to be harder to grip the ball. Like you said, in bad weather, in cold weather, harder to grip the ball, hard to get your hand around it.
Yeah.
Like somehow easier to fumble it maybe. Like, but I also think that that's a lot of like old wives' tales for scouting. Like there's like up until a couple of years ago, you also had to be 6'4" or 6'5" to be an NFL quarterback. And like, that's, I think, pretty concisely been proven to be wrong, you know?
Well, but there are some American players here, which is really fun to finally get to connect with them. A few of my favorite in particular, you know, we got Calvin Austin.
Yep. I was just going to say the entire Cincinnati Bearcat roster is there.
Well, okay. So everyone's been talking. I'm sure you see on Twitter, everyone's like, oh, Cincinnati's showing up at Senior Bowl. Okay. Listen, this is my breakdown of that. I think Jerome Ford is the absolute truth. He is as I tweeted, a beast among men out there. And it's very, very clear that he is extremely talented. He is small. Okay. And you can see it when he lines up with some of the other guys. But I think he makes up for it with his speed and his ability to bounce off of people, you know? So he's going to be fine.
I don't think that size matters as much as like it's traditionally made out to be. Like, we've seen small running backs, you know, I'm a Patriots fan, like Deion Lewis, Danny Woodhead. These guys, no, don't get wrong, they weren't like all pro running backs, but they were good NFL running backs despite being smaller guys. Like, you don't need to be huge. Darian Sproles, you know what I mean? Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe some, when a real big guy hits him, there's a light durability concern, but I don't think it's that huge a thing.
It's only interesting to me when it's noticeable. So for example, like I've covered Trey McBride mm-hmm. for a while, and he's out here obviously, and I've always thought him to be fairly large. His wingspan's insane. Like the width of his arms, they almost drag to his below his knees. It's crazy.
He's like the consensus top tight end.
We'll get into that, but yes, I have some, after seeing this group, you know, I have some thoughts, but when you watch him standing among these other guys that are here, he's tiny. I mean, like noticeably undersized. And there were even people saying, oh, I think people might use him as a fullback the way he blocks instead of as a tight end. So it was kind of shocking and jarring. Yeah. That's, it was shocking
not at
to
all
see
what
and
I've
to hear.
Heard about. I've only heard really good things about him as a tight end prospect. That's funny. Mm-hmm. I mean,
tight end, but if you see him out there with guys like, for example, I took a plane flight here from the Bay Area to New Orleans, and I sat next to a tight end on the Saints from Iowa State, and his name is Dylan. I can't ever pronounce his last name, but he is 6'6", 250, and I'm sitting next to this guy, and then I look at Trey. And I can see why people might be concerned about the height, you know, and the amount of weight he might need to put on. But Dylan Christian McCaffrey Soner. Didn't look like, Dylan Soner. Yep, that's him. Really nice guy. I actually want to have him on my podcast because he's very interesting. He's got a cool story. And that we talked about the blocking aspect of the tight end in the NFL and how similar it is to, you know, the fullback. And Trey took 70% of his snaps from inline with the Rams. So they know he can block, but can he extend out past these guys, his height and snag passes? That's going to be the real question. Yeah.
I get he doesn't look like Gronkowski or Kelce or someone like that.
Right. He looks more like Kittle, I think, but not as big as Kittle. I mean, Kittle's bigger like girth wise, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another one of those prospects and from the American, who I think is incredibly interesting, is Desmond Ridder, who's at the Senior Bowl this week. Because I've heard some people say that they think he's the top quarterback off the board. I've heard other people, including myself, who think not so much.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's one of those guys who's a bit divisive in terms of what you think about him. So I don't know. How's he looked so far?
I mean, he looks all right. I thought, honestly, he got caught up a lot in day one. And again, it's just shaking off rust of game scenarios, but he was sacked several times. He, you know, was a little slow in his release. And I know you're working with new guys and you have to allow for that, but he did not look as sharp as like Bailey Zappe, in my opinion. So is he more prototypical? Like when it comes to what you're looking for in an NFL quarterback, probably, but I think Carson Strong is an equally intriguing prospect just from the way that he plays game scenarios and when I watch him. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
I've said this before, so it's not new, but I've often said that Ridder struggles when he's forced to throw downfield from the pocket. He doesn't ever really look comfortable doing that when he has to.
Yeah.
Like at Cincinnati, they ran a lot of RPO, so he was very good at making decisions within that system. But he usually wasn't going off his second read when he had to make a pass. It was a lot of slants. It was a lot of flat routes. It was, you know, not. And when they went deep, Alec Pierce had really good hands and could make catches on not always the best ball. And a lot of times he was doing it from outside the pocket. That's not how an NFL system is going to operate for him. And I thought against Alabama, we saw him struggle against a team that said throw from the pocket, and he couldn't for most of the game. Against Alabama, he held onto the ball for too long too, and was like hesitant and stuck like that. So, you know, I don't know if it's just the speed of the game he's adjusting to and everyone's NFL caliber or what, but I mean, I don't think he's a top quarterback off the board.
I would agree with you on that one, but yeah. I mean, it doesn't mean, you know, we don't always see what they see. And I think everybody loves his personal story. They love his personality. They like that he's a leader. They like that he's a serious guy. He's got a family already, you know, so, and the NFL, they look at that. So,
he does check a lot of other boxes, but at the end of the day, either you can get it done on the field or you can't. Like, I know that like Josh Rosen got super highly criticized because, he like comes from money, so therefore he doesn't need football. And there's plenty to criticize Josh Rosen for as a prospect, you know, and he turned out bad in the NFL, but that just wasn't one of them. So I think they sometimes they're really weird about it. You know,
signs along the way, and like if you knew UCLA and you knew Rosen there was so many red flags.
Yeah, he was definitely immature and like spoiled, but that's different than he's rich, so therefore he doesn't need to try at the NFL level. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think
immature is one thing. And you know, like Rosen's not the only guy to come out and be immature. Johnny Manziel is the perfect example of all the talent in the world, but didn't have the maturity to enter the NFL when he did or be that famous when he was. So like, I get it. There's issues that can come from that. I just don't think that it's, I think that guys are judged way too harshly sometimes on the actions of themselves when they're 19. Cam Newton was judged very harshly when he went to Auburn about,
Cam Newton stole his teammate. He stole his teammate's laptop. Okay. Like that, I think you should be judged harshly for that.
Well, you know,
like what kind of character do you have when you're like 2 years? What is that?
Well, no, don't get me wrong. That was the wrong thing to do. But like 2-3 years later, you can expect some growth from people from when they're very young. That's all.
I hope that he would grow from it. And that's what you hope for these guys. But as was the case with Josh Rosen, he did not grow up from it.
Yeah.
He just stayed that same person. So I think that's the gamble that you're taking on guys like Ritter is he's a good personality, good kid. You hope that he stays that way. And then you take the guys that are immature and you hope that they grow and develop, but it's a gamble. You don't know that they will. So nobody has a crystal ball, especially not me.
Yeah, I know, but still, a lot of great players there, you know, a lot of great small school players. That's something that I tend to like about the Senior Bowl is that it's not just like, here are all the SEC All-Stars, you know, like there's like Troy Anderson from Montana State there. You get Isaiah Likely from Coastal. It's nice to get that variety.
Speaking of Isaiah Likely, that was one of the guys I think gives Trey McBride a run for his money from a sheer skills, technical, like, aspect, and he has been having phenomenal days down here. Mm-hmm. People are very impressed with him. From the scouts that I spoke to, they obviously they hadn't. Coastal is like one of those teams, much like Colorado State, that you don't always see on TV. You don't always hear about you know these guys and what they're doing. But and that was the case with Isaiah. But people are definitely taking notice with him. He's long. He's lean. He has the best work ethic and attitude that I've ever seen in a guy like that. And
yeah,
I like him. He's going to be good.
Awesome. And yeah, like I said earlier, the Senior Bowl, like a lot of it is what's that work ethic? Like what's your attitude like in practice more so than how fast are you or can you run this route tree? Because they know whether or not you can.
Right.
All right. Yeah. So that's awesome. You're down there for what? Until the end of the week through the game?
We actually are leaving tomorrow. They move practices indoors and media cannot attend due to COVID protocol. So we will be heading out, go back to New Orleans, fly home, go to the Pebble Beach Pro-Am this weekend, and then drive down to the Super Bowl on Monday. So
you are busy then.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. At least
it's good though.
You're not a 49ers fan, are you?
No, God, no, God.
Okay. No. I didn't know because you're from the Bay Area. So like,
yeah, you never know. No, insufferable. I cannot. I'm actually very glad. I'm glad that I know I'll say it. I'm glad the Niners lost because the fan base has become insufferable. They do not win with grace. It's not fun to be around Niners fans like that when they're winning. And Jimmy G failed upwards. I mean, Jesus Christ. Like I don't understand how someone can get so lucky, but be that, you know, and be that bad as an NFL quarterback. So I'm just glad that the charade is not fine.
He's
and the charade average. Is over. He's very average. Exactly.
But
and the fact
fine.
That he's been that's almost to two Super Bowls is wild.
He should have won one Super Bowl and they frankly should have gone to this one if Kyle Shanahan wasn't such a klutz in the fourth quarter of games. Imagine not going for it on 4th-and-2 there.
Yeah, well.
Imagine the way he blew a 10-point fourth quarter lead to the Chiefs in that Super Bowl. And he was the offensive coordinator for Atlanta for the 28-3 Super Bowl. He cannot hold a lead.
Oh, my God.
He cannot hold a lead.
That's crazy. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Yeah, he's the one who called back-to-back pass plays where Matt Ryan got sacked and they had a holding call to take the Falcons out of field goal range with like 4 minutes left in that Super Bowl. would have almost certain, right. like probably would have ended the game just because it was one more score that the Patriots would have had to score and they couldn't do it.
Jeez. Crazy.
Beautiful, beautiful play calling, Kyle. anyways, you also had a story go up recently on Trey McBride, who's there. I thought it got a good amount of attention too, which it deserved because it was really well written. It's on Underdog Dynasty, so go look it up if you haven't had the chance yet. But there's a really great story. For those who don't know, Trey McBride's parents are a lesbian couple there, and he was raised by them. And it's this whole, it's a completely unique situation from so many other people in the very male dominated sport and very, you know, everything is about testosterone and who can hit harder. Yeah. Who's the biggest. I thought it was just a really interesting perspective about everything.
Yeah. You know, I appreciate that because I was very nervous about that story and I worked on it for a long time. When I first heard about Trey McBride and his situation, it was actually from Jim Nagy, a conversation. Jim Nagy, the executive director of the Senior Bowl, former scout, he and I were chatting about tight ends for National Tight End Day. And he said, you got to check this guy out. We're going to have him as our number one tight end at the Senior Bowl. And he said, you know, we think he's going to go first round. That's what they think. That's what he said to me. And so I was like, man, I got to check this guy out. So I look into it and he goes, yeah, by the way, I think, you know, his family situation is very unique and you should look into it. So I find out that he was raised by, you know, two strong women and they were the first lesbian couple in their town of Fort Morgan where the kids grew up. And one of the moms, Kate, had all five children herself, you know, which is incredible. I mean, there was some misinformation saying that it was in vitro and all this stuff, but she actually gave birth to all five children. One set was twins. Trey is actually a twin. Mm. His twin Dylan was a collegiate wrestler. So I just was like, I got to meet these women because how incredible to raise four boys and four athletes. People don't realize that Trey's older brother, Toby, also played at Colorado State, was a defensive lineman there with him. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of crazy, you know, in this day and age to see something like that. One of the moms is a sheriff in the Fort Morgan, you know, sheriff's department, 16 years. And the other mom, Kate, raises golden retrievers and works with nonprofits and is incredible. So I flew out, talked to him. I was like, I got to tell your story. They trusted me with it, which I appreciate. And I tried to do it as much justice as I could while impressing on people that this is history being made. When he gets drafted in likely the first or second round, he'll be the first NFL player with lesbian parents to be drafted. So we're seeing this piece of history and to be a part of that was really cool. So they're coming out here tomorrow, his whole family. So I'm excited to see him.
Awesome. Yeah. And like I said, that's up on Underdog Dynasty. So check it out if you haven't, it is really good. The other big piece of college football news right now is that the day we're recording, it's about 4:45 right now on National Signing Day. And it's a whole, I'm writing a pretty big roundup right now for the AAC, but you know, this signing day is not what it used to be. Do you remember? I know you remember, but do you remember the way it used to be where it was basically all day long, players are committing and flipping like on the spot and everyone had to sign this one day. And it was like this panic day of like there was a million stories a minute and you had to like pick and choose what you're focusing on.
I never really got too invested in the recruiting aspect of it just because it's so massive. I mean, just to have to know all these things about high school recruits and their stars and all this stuff, like I can't keep up. So I never got really super invested. So
that's fair. I always feel a little bit gross about, hey, ooh, let's watch the 16-year-old run routes. I'm like, no, that's okay. I don't need to do that. But I do tend to take 24/7 sports is what I think is generally the industry consensus best at what they do, because they do consensus they do consensus rankings based on the other different places that do these things like Rivals and ESPN and then their own rankings. And they do a pretty good job of it. And I just sort of like take what they say and I don't actually pay that much attention to the individual recruits myself. I'll let whatever they scouted them as be my guide because like I said, I'm in the same boat of, I don't want to pay too much attention to individual high schoolers and where they're going.
Yeah.
But I am interested always to see how the different classes break down, how different coaches approach recruiting. who's recruiting well and all that stuff, because it does affect the future of your program. You know, like,
yeah.
I don't like the idea that your star ranking matters isn't really true on an individual basis. You know, like Mackenzie Milton for UCF was a 2-star. I think Desmond Ridder was a 2-star. Like, you can be a low rated prospect and be great. And you can be a high rated 5-star prospect, go to Alabama and never see the field because it turns out you're actually no good. Like, but that's on an individual basis. On the whole, on the aggregate, whoever has the higher recruiting class usually has the most talent. You know, there's a reason Cincinnati for the past like 5 years has had the top class in the American. And it's because, well, I strike that, reverse it. There's a reason why Cincinnati is the top team in the American right now. It's because basically the last 5 years they've had the top class and they developed talent well, and it's a mixture of things. So
I see, I think I agree with you in that it is that, but it's the development, because you look at Stanford, I'm going to use them as an example, and they have, you know, routinely had high recruiting classes since the Andrew Luck days, you know, since Christian McCaffrey days. And there has been a steady decline and downturn in the development of said players. So I think the key word you said was development. Like, yes, you have to have the high one to be good, but you also have to take these young kids that are nowhere near generally the level of competition that it takes to go from high school to college right away. And you have to develop them as players, which means you have to learn who they are, how they respond to things, get them in. That's nutrition, that's strength training, you know, such a big part. So I think you nailed it with that.
Yeah, it is that balance, because whether they're, like I said, whether they're like a 5-star going to Georgia or a 0-star going to Navy, you do need to develop the player into being something.
Ouch. Right.
Well, okay. I've talked about so much with Navy. Navy doesn't recruit the same way anyone else does other than Army and Air Force. So we know why they're military academies. They're incredibly hard to get.
No, but 0 stars. You couldn't even give them one, just like a 1-star.
I don't think they do 1-star. I think it basically is 5-4-3.
It's always 0.
I think it's 5-4-3-2-0. I don't think I've ever seen a 1-star.
That's really mean. That's mean. Well, I'm gonna like petition to get that changed. I don't like that.
Well, then what are you gonna do with all the 0-stars who are really a 0-star?
Well, then, you know, then you get, I don't know, then you don't get graded because that's how bad you are.
Some guys don't get graded. That's what a 0-star kind of is.
Then don't say 0, just say no grade. That at least feels like.
But anyways, my point is, it helps if you can get good talent and develop it well. But you know, it starts with getting that good talent. And if you're starting with lesser talent, not to be like rude to the teams that end up bringing in the quote unquote lesser talent, you can develop it very well, but there sometimes is a ceiling cap just to how good it can get. That's all.
100%. I agree. I want to do a quick Senior Bowl re-shout out because that just came across my desk right here. Desmond Ridder threw the furthest pass by air distance, 62.5 yards on a deep route down the sideline to Bo Melton. The pass was also the highest initial spin rate recorded on a pass in the national practice today. 673.9 RPM. Anybody out there?
Spin rate season.
So anybody out there that's big into that, that's courtesy of Zebra Technology that's out here. I think it's really cool that they do those measure. I mean, it may not mean anything, but it's interesting to me when they take those measurements. So I guess there you go. Desmond Ridder's setting records already. The other person I wanted to shout out was Chris Paul, the offensive tackle from Tulsa, had an incredible day one where people were commenting that he looks like his old self again. So shout out the Golden Hurricane, Chris Paul, doing big things, hopefully going to get drafted and keep Tulsa in the NFL.
Well, Zaven Collins is there, so.
I said keep him. I didn't say get him. I just said keep him there.
All right.
That was my AAC, you know, as I'm getting together. So
speaking
many
of Tulsa,
here.
Though, old Tulsa friend of Caleb Evans is there too, but he's probably wearing a Missouri lid. Just throwing that one out there too. For the
there are. It's funny to see guys. There are a lot of guys here that are former teammates of each other because of, you know, the whole transfer portal and last. Yeah, it's changed everything. So it's kind of fun. We got to record earlier with a kid named Mario Goodrich from Clemson. He's a CB, and he was reunited with his buddy Darion Kendrick from Georgia, who actually started at Clemson and then transferred to Georgia. And they've been going against each other.
Yeah.
They had Mario interview. He wants to be a sports broadcaster one day. So we had him interview Darian. So that interview is actually on my Twitter. If people want to check it out, it's pretty funny.
Awesome. Absolutely. Yeah. Back to the recruiting stuff.
I know. Sorry. I circled out of that real quick.
No worries.
I just was like, I saw this and I was like, I got to mention one, you know, I've been harsh on Desmond Ridder. So I wanted to give him
the credit,
you know, his due for that.
100%. Definitely.
Yeah.
Actually, I've got one more thing to say really quickly about
this. Okay. Let's do it.
There are so many Cincinnati players there. Plus, you know, Sauce Gardner's not even there. And he's, you know, obviously moving on to the NFL too. I have to think they take a decline. There's way too much talent there for them to be ready to replace it at every single position. That's all I want to say real quick, because I didn't mean to earlier.
Yeah, I know.
No way they don't take a step back with all that talent moving on. Anyways, back to recruiting.
Yeah. Back.
Like I said earlier, there's like a million different recruiting sites now that you can go to. 24/7 Rivals, ESPN does the recruiting stuff, though I don't think they do it particularly well. To be honest with you, it's very Power Five centric, and I just don't think they do a good job of it. It's not their focus as a company, and it's like a side thing they do. And then there's this new one, On3, which was founded by the same guy who does who made 24/7. I think he also made Rivals. So like, he just like, I forget the guy's name right now, but his whole model of like businesses building recruiting sites and selling them to like CBS and Fox for tons and tons of money. So that's a great gig if you can get it. You know, work out well for him. So there's a million of them, but 24/7 I think is generally the industry standard. If a site's talking about a class and they don't have their own rankings to work off of, you know, in that rankings, they've kind of broken it up. Now there's the overall class rankings, then the recruit rankings and transfer portal rankings. And you see a little bit of a difference in that and how teams have attacked. Like UCF is the American's top team overall, but since he's the top recruiting team, but UCF brought in like 10 transfers in Gus's first year there, which makes them the top transfer team. So they're best overall in the aggregate kind of deal, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, a little bit.
I was going to say, it's easier if you just go to 24/7 site and just play around a little bit at the recruiting rankings, you know, visual representation of it. But, you know, the overall rankings is kind of what I'm looking at. Here's what I'm saying when I get at this. So like, recognize now that, you know, the freshmen coming into the school out of high school rankings are different than the overall rankings on 24/7 right now. But now it's UCF, Cincinnati, Houston, top three. Those are the three teams moving to the Big 12. They've got pretty much the most resources in the conference. They've had most of the recent success too as a group. That's not surprising in any way. After that, it's Memphis, who's had a lot of recent success and invests a lot there. USF after that, who is finally starting to invest in the program and has been hitting the transfer portal hard, very hard in the portal.
Hard.
You know, from there kind of goes the way you think it would for the most part. SMU comes in next. They're in a coaching change. Tulane, ECU, Tulsa.
So here's my thoughts on SMU. You know, I was never really big on the train during the season. I was not a huge Sonny Dykes fan. I was not really impressed by the hire because I didn't understand it. And you tried to explain it to me. I still don't really get it. It's something I think I need to see put into practice, but there's a big but. I have been impressed with the support staff that has been hired around the program.
Yeah, for sure. SMU is investing a lot of money in football right now. I think there's a few teams in the conference that the Big 12 taking, you know, Houston, UCF, Cincy was a wake up call to. I think SMU, it was a huge financial wake up call, and they've had a couple of them in recent years. Like I know June Jones, back when he was the SMU coach at AAC Media Days in like 2014, said that SMU was finally getting around to investing in facilities, and they're just doing it 20 years after, say, TCU was his comparison. And that's why TCU got the call up to the Big 12 and SMU was still struggling to get to that point. Now I think they're saying, oh shoot, that was enough. We have to kick it up a notch again. I wrote an article about the financial things going on. And I wrote an article specifically about a $50 million donation SMU received. So like in both of those, I talk about SMU is spending money to get good. USF is finally, basically it took UCF going to the Big 12 and passing USF in terms of conference prestige to get USF to build an indoor practice facility finally, and someone on like the board of trustees shouting about an on-campus stadium. It took a lot to get to these points for a few of these teams, and you know, the wake-up call is there. And yeah, SMU support staff is a great example of that.
Yep, that was just my two cents on that. But I'm looking forward to your article on all these recruiting classes because it's so important to the future of these programs.
Yeah, I'm going to try to do a quick breakdown on all of them in one big piece and see how that looks at the end of it. And hopefully I don't need to break into smaller, more digestible pieces. For sure. The one last thing I'll say about though is Tulsa, way back the 121st ranked class in the country, coming off this year where they won a bowl game, is really, really, really bad. I don't know what's going on. Philip Montgomery's never been a great recruiter to Tulsa, and Tulsa's not an easy place to recruit to, but that's egregiously bad. There's only 130 FBS teams.
Yeah.
You should not be back there. That last 10 should be UMass, UConn, and the MAC, basically. It should not, you know, I mean, it should not be Tulsa. You should be able to go into Texas and get more talent.
Right.
That's all I had to say about it. Like I said, hopefully for tomorrow, same day as this podcast, that's Thursday, February 3rd, I'll have that article up maybe a little bit later, depending on how long it takes me to properly research and write. But that's the goal anyways.
Keep your eyes out for it, fam.
Exactly. Hopefully Wi-Fi issues haven't clogged us up too much, but I think we're having a good time with it anyways. Those are all our big stories right now. We're in the off season, and after this, it's going to basically be just the draft to look forward to for a little while. And we'll have,
which I love.
I do. I'm a big draft person too, but we can only talk about it so much before it gets like, you know, throwing another coat of paint on the wall and another coat of paint on the wall and another coat of paint on the wall. You know, at some point it's been done, but we'll find ways to keep it entertaining this off season. I'm sure.
I will definitely be out in search of those human interest stories that'll try and keep it fresh for people instead of just X's and O's. So
100%. You can find me at, you cut out just like halfway through that thought, but it was a quick thought at least.
All right.
Good stuff. Love technology. You can find me at Dan_Morrison96 on Twitter.
You can find me at MLNEM on Twitter and Instagram. That's EMILNEM.
All right. And we're off.